gentlemen. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrik. This is Red Ice TV. It's always a pleasure having you here. RedIce.tv is the website. If you want to check us out on YouTube, just look for Red Ice TV there as well. And if you want to support what we do, check out the member section, RedIceMembers.com. That's where you can catch the second hour, our live TV show, and all the videos and everything else we have for you. So today we're going to go back into the exploration of esoteric Hollywood and talk a bit about a new TV show. It's a reboot of a TV show. I'm sure you've heard of it, Twin Peaks. This ran 25 years ago, two seasons, and it was a follow-up film as well called Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. A lot of esoteric occult motifs and themes in this show. Very interesting, directed by David Lynch, also co-authored by Mark Frost. And we have none other than Jay Dyer with us here today to talk about this and break this down for us. Welcome back, Jay. It's a pleasure having you here again.
Thank you. I'm always happy to talk about movies, and I'm a big David Lynch fan, so absolutely.
I am too. You know, I remember watching the Twin Peaks show many, many years ago, and I always enjoyed it. I always thought it was very interesting, and part of me, I have to admit, was also, as I've you know, grow older, I thought a lot of this is just humbug. It's just they throw everything in they can there. It's over the top in terms of the mystique. It's over the top in terms of trying to inject esoteric symbolism. And for a while, I even felt that, you know what, maybe they're just doing that to get people to decode it. There is such a thing, I think, Jay, to this aspect that if you don't know it, if it remains a mystery, you will be more inclined to try to figure out what it is, right? That it's the draw and a pull in itself. But as we were talking before the show, you swiftly corrected me that this is none of such thing. This is actually a highly esoteric message in the Twin Peaks series. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, I think most artists or authors of literature are interested in giving a piece of work that, you know, future generations will try to decode. So there's some truth to that in what you said. It's not, you know, that there could be some intentional over-mystifying for the purpose of, you know, like you said, building mystery. But I also think that, you know, having looked at this for a long time and looked at a lot of these other traditions and religious traditions that kind of undergird this series mythology, as well as other Lynch films, I think you can decode a general pattern at work there. And so I don't think that it's all bunk. I think that there's a pretty consistent lexicon that we can kind of draw up that encapsulates the patterns in David Lynch movies. And so this, you know, you can go all the way back to Eraserhead. You can look at his 80s films and then into the 90s, Blue Velvet, Wild at Heart, maybe even Dune to a degree. And then you get into the more recent films like Inland Empire. And I think you do see recurring themes and recurring patterns that show that there's at least some structure here. It's not just at random. It's not just a bunch of symbolic hoodoo. And I think I was pretty much confirmed in that thesis by the recent book that Mark Frost put out in October, which is The Secret History of Twin Peaks. So we'll get into some of that, but I wrote my analysis of Twin Peaks, which is a chapter in my book, which has done really, really well, especially in the last few months. It's gotten so many hits, somewhere around 50 to 70,000. So it's for an article that's doing really well. And what I did was I watched most of the Lynch canon a few times and then went to Twin Peaks, watched it two or three times through. And after a while, you can really pick out the motifs, and it's a lot of things. So I can't boil it all down in one phrase. But if I were to try, I would say that it's a kind of neo-noir soap opera, psychodrama, satire that is America in microcosm. Not just modern America, but also kind of the history of America. So you have this town of very weird, strange people who are kind of oblivious, except for a few people that kind of run things, like Ben Horn. He's the, you know, the wealthy business guy who owns most of the town, and he's kind of in these machinations to take over the sawmill from Josie Packard, and that's all kind of side story stuff, which is part of the soap opera drama, which Lynch is satirizing. If you remember back in the 80s and 90s, soap operas were a lot bigger than they are now. So that's part of the comedic element of it, is that, you know, Lynch is, I think, saying America's kind of a soap opera in a way, a kind of a dark soap opera. And then it also brings in Native American traditions and mythology. It brings in Tibetan traditions and mythology, and it also brings in more esoteric and occult elements like Crowleyanism and so forth. So all of that actually plays a background role to understanding the symbols and the archetypes. And I wouldn't pretend to have everything in David Lynch's lexicon of symbology figured out, because even he says at times in interviews that in some of the scenes and films, he's even putting in his own dreams and thoughts. So it's not always totally coherent, but again, there's still a general rule or narrative that we can follow that is pretty much the case for most of his films. And that's why they all kind of have the same atmosphere, the same themes, the same weirdness, you know, which pretty much no one else seems able to create. And I think that's
that is
why,
true. Yeah,
I think that's why people like his stuff, is that, you know, TV and films are so, cut and paste now. They're so cookie cutter that we don't really see this kind of stuff anymore. And I'm not denying that Lynch draws on inspirations. Obviously he's very influenced by Hitchcock. He's very influenced by noir films like Laura or Double Indemnity. You know, again, both of those films actually have reference to what's in Twin Peaks. So
yeah,
there's a lot at work here, but it can be decoded. And I think that we can do that in this talk.
Yeah, let's get into it a bit. I mean, one thing I think that should be mentioned is that David Lynch has always been very interested in those kinds of traditions. I remember reading an article years ago. He's talking about how he was into TM, you know, transcendental meditation. And I couldn't help, as I've been piecing together this in hindsight, you know, as I said, I used to love the show, watch it all the time. It was a great, you know, hit when you know, I was a kid, and even everyone in Sweden were watching it. And of course, we were so young then, everyone didn't know what right. It was about, or they just under, you know, they liked it. There was some draw there, but you know, I thought, I wonder if this guy is tapping into things which he doesn't really understand himself, and if he simply has become a tool, if you know what I'm talking about, in the sense that he's projecting further the kind of, you know, maybe some of the inner demons that he has, or some of the things that he connects with. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, he says in interviews that his process is still connected to meditation, so he views it as the subject kind of going into the subconscious, or the what we might call the spiritual realm, or whatever you think of the dream realm as. And you know, that from there he receives inspiration, and then he says he, you know, when he wakes up, you know, he kind of writes down his ideas. So you know, that's all obviously part of Eastern meditation, and that's obviously part of, you know, the theme of Twin Peaks, but it's also pretty clear in a lot of the other Lynch films as well. So, I think that's definitely what's going on. He, as to how much esoteric stuff he knows, I don't really know, but, you know, he and at least Mark Frost seem to have quite a few things, at their disposal, to which they, you know, I think construct a pretty interesting and funny story. And, you know, he's really good at that. And he likes to tell the stories out of order, you know, on purpose, because our experience, you know, we learn things about the past. We project things into the future, and we kind of exist in a somewhat in between state where we don't always know what the real story was, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So a lot of times we're having to kind of piece together fragments, and he's all about piecing together fragments. Other themes in his works are things like dissociation. This comes up a lot, especially in Mulholland Drive or Lost Highway. Both of the main characters, it's focused on their dissociation. It happens in Inland Empire too with Laura Dern. And dissociation and alternate personalities and all that, DID, MPD, that's going to play a big role with Laura Palmer and with Leland and with Bob and with Wyndham Earl and all of the, you know, infamous characters that make up the world of Twin Peaks.
Do you think that's because he knows a little bit of the kind of stuff we've been talking about for years? MKUltra, mind control, trauma-based mind control with split personalities, right?
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, we go back to 2005 and he was on Alex Jones.
That's right. So, I do remember that. Yeah, that's when I learned about his meditation stuff.
Questioning 9/11 back then,
yeah.
So I would assume that he probably has a grasp of the conspiracy realm,
yeah,
to some degree.
Yeah,
And, you know, as I said, the Mark Frost book that came out, I'm assuming Lynch is aware of the contents of the book, because a lot of what we're seeing in the new episodes, the four new episodes that are out presently, seems to have a lot to do with the Mark Frost book. There were clues that Mark Frost put in the book that relate to the show, to this new season. So, yeah, I think it's a safe assumption to say that Lynch is aware of a lot of this.
What else do you think we should talk about, Jay, when it comes to the first season? Before we talk about the new stuff and what was in there, we have some scenes to show and everything else. What's your general approach to the show? There's, as we've said now, there's a lot of things weaved in there which seems to allude to, you know, understandings of what's been going on within the search for extraterrestrials among the military personnel, and, you know, these kinds of things, the esoteric, the occult themes that he seems to have an awareness of a darker, deeper faction within maybe the state that has been very influential and things like this. So he knows some stuff, Lynch.
Yeah. So if we look at the choice of location, it's a wooded region, mountainous region, Twin Peaks. And these two peaks are part of the themes of duality that are consistent throughout. So you'll have the White Lodge and the Black Lodge. It's just two different heaven and hell, we might say loosely, that exist in a spiritual plane that is more or less right next to our plane of existence. And the two peaks then kind of also represent that duality between the light and the dark, black and white, good and evil. And it's, as I said, it's intertwined and told at times through the Native American mythology, through the character Hawk. You know, he'll talk about the White Lodge and the Black Lodge, and he'll talk about spirit possession and things like that. And then you'll get elements where we are looking at a cult. So Leland and his cadre appear to have been in some way involved in a kind of teen trafficking sex cult. A prostitution, because Ben Horn, the big rich business guy, owns this secret prostitution lodge called One Eye Jack's, and they're actually servicing wealthy people with teenage girls from the high school.
So the pedo-gate knowledge right there.
Yeah, that's all kept on the down low.
Yeah,
and so if, you know, for a long time in the first season, it's all centered around the death of the homecoming queen, Laura Palmer, and you're thinking, well, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be Ben Horn, because he's the one that's running the prostitution ring. And there seems to be a cult involvement too, which is kind of mysterious, that people, there's this ring, you know, that different people possess at different times, that is this magical green ring that kind of signifies a marriage to the spirits, or the spirit entity, the man from another place, which is roughly demonic, I think, pretty clearly, because he's explained to be parasitical. He feeds off of the pain and suffering of victims. And that's ultimately what the film Fire Walk With Me reveals. And of course the title itself, Fire Walk With Me, is supposed to give a kind of shamanic impression. You know, it's the shaman chants out between two worlds. He's in this middle state between two planes of existence, Fire Walk With Me, which is like, you know, fire walking, that what shamans do. So, which is believed to happen through, you know, the possession of some spirit or God. So that's what's really going on in Twin Peaks. And it's not just a prostitution ring or just a cult. It's a cult that kind of has a direct connection in the film's narrative to dark spiritual forces. And these forces require certain things like human sacrifice. And that's why Lynch has quotes like, you know, what I learned is that beneath the surface, there's another world. And then if you keep digging, still deeper worlds beyond these. So, you know, that lines up with actually the spiritual view of a lot of religions, you know, the other planes of existence inhabited by different spirits. And that's who these other weird characters are, like the old woman and the little boy that kind of looks like a young David Lynch, and the giant. These are spiritual entities that populate this world, this other plane of existence, that at times help out Agent Cooper in his kind of Sherlock Holmes style detective mystery. And then at times there are nefarious spirits, you know, Bob, man from another place, and so forth. And so the chief villain throughout season one we think is some human who's, you know, murdering girls. But it turns out that it's actually a spirit, Bob, a former serial killer who, when he passed on, fell into the service of the demon. And he more or less has to do the demon's bidding. So the way he does that is through the possession of different characters who have, in presumably in some way, opened themselves up through moral corruption or involvement in the occult or something like that, to being possessed by Bob. And so that's what happens, is that Bob takes over in season one and early, and in season two, Laura's dad, Leland. And so we find out that Leland is who has actually molested Laura, and ultimately who murdered her. But it's because he's possessed by Bob.
So let's take a look at some of the scenes in there too, because that's pretty interesting. Because many people have said, you know, there's an awareness of the Freemasonic thing, as, you know, the ring that the dwarf held up earlier, kind of as a pseudo-Masonic symbol. I think that's on the front cover of the book by Mark Frost as well, if you want to show us that, actually.
The ring is stated to be an actual magical ring, and it's put in the context of Crowleyanism explicitly in the book. So that is the context for it. So this is where we get these other characters like the Major Briggs and Wyndham Earl later on in season two, who are spoken of as being involved in various actual real world government projects, Project Blue Book and the Star Wars Defense Initiative and so forth. The JPL laboratories, Jack Parsons is mentioned in the book.
Interesting.
As well as L. Ron Hubbard. And that's all put in the context of kind of being, you know, secretive government stuff. And I don't think that we're never told that it's aliens. You know, there's discussion of UFOs, but the context is always put back into the terrestrial. It's always the two planes of existence, you know, the White Lodge and the Black Lodge. So it's spiritual realities. It's not aliens.
But it's also kind of an allusion a little bit to maybe a demonic nature, that might seem as an extraterrestrial one, it's kind of put in those old, as you said, old good versus evil kind of terms, an ancient spirituality that we have, seem to be replicated all over the place, no matter what culture you go to. That's obvious. Let's talk a bit about that, the Red Lodge type look that he's chosen for this. It's not quite a checkered floor, but it has that black and white nature to it again that we talked about, diagonal kind of chevrons, I guess you would say it is.
Chevrons, yeah. Interestingly, what I believe was kind of used in Egyptian symbology. So I think he probably opted for something less obvious than, you know, the black and white patterns of a lodge floor or something. He wanted something a little more dizzying and disconcerting to the eye, to give the impression of, you know, you're put into a dizzying state when you're in this room and you see this little midget guy who is the man from another place, and he is the spiritual entity that kind of runs this area, or the Black Lodge. And he's, we consistently get the impression he's nefarious. And you'll notice as well, the Saturn image next to Cooper there, there's a little Saturn statuette there. And all of this comes up later in season two, where they realize that the conjunction of various planets is supposed to be significant for the opening of this spiritual door or portal at Glastonbury Grove. So there's a grove out in the woods, which was the ancient, had some ancient connection to, you know, the Native American religion and mythology. And at certain times, these portals open. And so that's actually the key to understanding a lot of the mystery that's happening in the new season that people are kind of mystified by. They're like, what are these portals? Why is Cooper traveling through the electrical outlets? And, you know, what is this glass box where, you know, spirits appear?
Yeah.
The general idea is that the Star Wars Defense Initiative and these different black ops projects under the cover of aliens might have been looking into spiritual stuff. Hence, we get references to MK Ultra and mind control in the book. There's the fictional character, Dr. Jacoby, who is in this fictional book, a fictional book with a fictional book in it, who's friends with Tim Leary. And so Tim Leary endorses his book, and that's why he's kind of the hippie psychiatrist doctor. And he's basically a Carlos Castaneda type character. He's done all this research into hallucinogens and shamanic traditions, and he thinks that, you know, you can pioneer Jungian psychology through the use of hallucinogens. So there's also that MKUltra element, which I believe that most of that, if you read John Marx's book, The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, most of that research into hallucinogens and shamanic indigenous traditions was done by the military covertly and by the psychiatric establishment, ultimately for the purpose of social engineering and mind control. It had nothing really to do with, I mean, it had very little to do with creating a programmed assassin or something like that. So that's another kind of subtle theme in the series, is the Dr. Jacoby character and his research into these fringe sort of psychiatric approaches, but are explicitly set in the context of MKUltra.
Yeah, let's actually listen to a clip right there when the general Briggs comes in and kind of gives Cooper a little bit of inside information. He talks about kind of, I guess, the deep state and the way that they've gone rogue and how it relates to messages received. It's pretty interesting. Let's check this out.
I have a message for you.
From whom?
Now, I'm not at liberty to reveal the nature of my work. This secrecy pains me from time to time. Any bureaucracy that functions in secret inevitably lends itself to corruption. But these rules I have pledged to uphold. I believe a pledge is sacred.
Speaking as a man and a fellow employee of the federal government, so do I.
Well, I may reveal this much. Among my many tasks is the maintenance of deep space monitors aimed at galaxies beyond our own. We routinely receive various communications, space garbage, to decode and examine. They look something like this. It's radio waves and gibberish, Agent Cooper. Till Thursday night. Friday morning, exact.
Around the time that I was shot.
The readout took us by surprise. Roll after roll of gibberish, and all of a sudden, the owls are not what they seem.
Right. Interesting. I mean, that's symbolically, yeah. Of course, the first symbol of the real order of the Illuminati was an owl, and you had the tie into the Minervan kind of, I guess, qualities that they wanted to put on the order. Does that have anything to do with this?
Yeah, you can see here in Mark Frost's book, he has a
Bohemian Grove owl, right?
A clear reference to, yeah, Bohemian Grove.
That's not Moloch, by the way. We've clarified that, but right, nonetheless, yeah, it is an owl in Bohemian Grove. That's what it is.
And that's where the Star Wars Defense Initiative was proposed.
Interesting.
So another interesting aspect of the book is that the deep state projects that Wyndham Earl, the later nemesis to Coop in season 2, who's the former FBI agent who was actually a part of Project Blue Book and Project Blue Mountain, as it's called, that they were actually working on the Whore of Babylon ritual, which is, you know, the Crowleyan reading, Gnostic reading of John's Apocalypse, where he thought that it was a magical text that he could invoke the Whore of Babylon. So there's actually a Whore of Babylon imagery in this too, you know, the woman in the red dress and this kind of stuff, which comes up in season 4. And so that's all in the background of this TV show. And I don't know. I'm just happy that my analysis was 100% correct. I can brag about that. So I got every bit of it right. But yeah, I mean, all of it's there. It's kind of all of the conspiracies. I don't mean this in to denigrate the show, but it is kind of, in a way, like X-Files. A lot of the conspiracies are kind of packed into this one show. And one of the areas that's mystified a lot of people for a long time is from the film Fire Walk With Me, where at the beginning you have the Kiefer Sutherland character and the Chris Isaac character, the two FBI agents, who are tasked with the prequel investigation of the first murder of either Ronette Pulaski or the blonde girl, I forget her name. But when they land to go be debriefed Gordon Cole, the David Lynch character, is there, and there's a woman who comes out, and she's all dressed weird, and she does all these weird hand signals, and she's wearing a blue rose. And so the Chris Isaac character explains that that was all symbols that they didn't want to say audibly, and that was telling him what to expect at Twin Peaks. And so what he was supposed to expect was opposition from the local law enforcement and et cetera, et cetera. But nobody ever understood what the blue rose was, and that is now playing a big part of the new episodes. And Cooper, who ends up trapped in the spiritual world in the Black Lodge, Cooper, the real Cooper, he sees this ghostly image of Major Briggs saying blue rose. So, and then the way the fourth episode ended was David Lynch's character is having a discussion with Albert, one of the other FBI guys, and they realize that this is a blue rose case. And so I think what other people who analyze this show and the movie have summarized is that this is more or less a case with supernatural elements. That's all that it means. And I think that's probably right. So it's the rough equivalent of an X-File. And that's why you have the appearance of Fox Mulder, in some of the episodes in his right. Goofy transgender character.
That's right. Exactly. He does show up. I remember that. It was like, God, he looks bad. That guy, here's Denise. Yeah. Let's take a look at a scene here. I think there's some nudity in this too, folks, but let's just take a look at this one to get a little sample of it here. so he's like thrown up on the floor. So there's a switch that takes place at what point here? I guess this is some alternate universe or something. And then he is switched out and he comes back with his essence, for the lack of a better term, has been removed. It's a little golden ball. And with that, he acts as a complete moron and idiot. But there's a scene here where he does that kind of teleportation through the electric socket, basically. Is that some occult esoteric idea that it's somehow there's some spiritual essence in electricity? Is that what's being conveyed, you think?
Well, I mean, I'm not aware of a specific reference to that. There could be, but the point of those scenes, I think, is that for whatever reason, David Lynch has chosen this theme that in the spiritual world, there's a kind of tapping into our world through electricity. And this probably goes back to the idea of ancient civilizations or tribes seeing lightning. So they would see lightning. Oh, that must be the gods, right? So lightning is, it's pure blinding light. It must be something from the spiritual realm. And so I think he's just kind of carried that over. And throughout his movies and films, you'll have the flickering light and the fan that's spinning. And these are symbolic ways to show the presence of another worldly spirit or a demon. And so that's the reason that in this scene that you're talking about, the real Cooper is trying to come back. There was a date that was set for him to emerge out of the Black Lodge and into his normal persona. So it's kind of cast as if they created maybe this fake clone bot Cooper, who's this idiot real estate. He's wearing his ugly Century 21 real estate agent coat there. But we don't really know. And sometimes David Lynch will play with that kind of stuff, the bridge between fake in reality. But I think what's happening is just that these are alternate personas that have kind of been erected that are in the body of Coop, so to speak. And so maybe part of that, or maybe part of that deep state project was cloning or something like that. So we don't know. We're not told. But this is basically Dougie is just a comical fake Cooper who was supposed to in some way stand in his place. And there's another theme that in the Black Lodge, and this goes back to Hawk's explanation of Native American mythology, that when you pass on to the next life, you kind of have to go on a journey. And part of that journey involves facing up to your worst self, and you have to kind of overcome it and not give in to fear. And if you have love and not fear, then you pass over into, the afterlife, the good afterlife, the White Lodge. So there's these doppelgangers who are phantasms or creations of the lodge, and they just simply represent the Jungian shade self, the worst aspect of yourself. And if you give into it, then the shade self will possess the body of your character. But now what's going on, I think, in this is that the character Bob, the demon or the serial killer from the original two seasons, is Bob that is still possessing the body of Cooper, the Cooper from, you know, 25 years ago. And the real Coop is stuck in the Black Lodge. And so there was this trickery where Bob didn't want to go back in the Black Lodge. So he avoided being sucked back in. And so now there's two Coopers that are out in the real world. And we don't know what's going on beyond that.
Do you think most people that watch this, it's just like, I mean, obviously it goes way over their head if they're not initiated into any of this work. And to, let me phrase it this, do you think that any of this kind of stuff is influencing people when they're watching it, whether they know it or not?
I remember when I was young and I watched it, I didn't know what was going on. And I remember we would go, my buddies and I in high school, you know, we go and watch David Lynch movies in the theater. I remember going to see Lost Highway in the theater and I had no idea what was going on. I just thought it was imagery out of order, just trying to be edgy for no reason.
Right.
And then as you get older and as you learn different religious traditions and philosophies and ideas, and then also a lot of the conspiracy stuff. And again, I'm totally vindicated because Mark Frost's book is all about conspiracies. That's a big part of the show. And so I'm absolutely certain that this is supposed to be about things like MK Ultra and, you know, maybe Crowleyanism to a degree and the spiritual realm. And so, yes, I don't doubt that for most people. And I, the reactions I've been seeing is a lot of people like it because it's so different from, you know, typical nonsense TV. But they're mystified. They're just kind of like, this makes no sense. But again, if you have the right lexicon and the right symbols and an understanding, I think it does make quite a bit of sense. Not everything.
Yeah, it's a mishmash in some areas maybe, but it's also, again, I did get the feeling that the more you kind of throw out there, the more things will stick and the more people will, they will see one thing that catches their eye, right? And it was like, oh my God, that this is what it means, because I think there might be a tendency to over and hyper analyze these things as well, right? That every little instant means something and there's some cryptic message in it.
Well, maybe. I mean, some directors are that precise. I mean, if you think about, you know, Kubrick was that way. He was obsessed with details. And now I'm not, that doesn't mean that everybody gets it right. That, you know, they may be misreading some detail in Kubrick at times. But, you know, a lot of directors are very attentive to details. And I would say that, you know, if you're familiar with Lynch's canon of films, you know, it's not a stretch to say that it is all on purpose. And there is a consistent story being told. The narrative might be being told out of order, but Lynch is very influenced by surrealism and even surrealist art. You know, if you look at Salvador Dali or somebody like that, I mean, there's still imagery and symbols that are tangible and decipherable. It's not all nonsense, even in the midst of its apparent nonsense. So that's another important aspect I should have mentioned too, was Lynch's surrealism. And all the early surrealists, Andre Breton and these different characters, they were very interested in the occult in all different forms and fashions. So a lot of their early art was consciously occultic in various ways. And I think that Lynch is carrying on that pattern, that theme. And that's why we get, you know, with the new dead body in the new four episodes, you get this Black Dahlia-esque imagery with the head being severed from the body and different, you know, the eye has been removed. This eye theme is very consistent too, with people being shot in the eye, Nadine losing her vision, being shot in the eye. You know, again, this is one-eyed Jax. You know, that's another prominent theme. So, I think it all has a pretty consistent meaning.
Now, when Mark Frost is concerned, do you think then that, and I'm not saying that Lynch is not on his page or anything like that, but do you think that it implies that they know stuff that your average person don't? Have they been initiated in some way into the deeper mysteries or the deep state activities?
Well, I know that if we think about the claims of Dean Haglund that the CIA was sort of involved in consulting as to what would be in the X-Files. And then, you know, we think about the predictive programming in Lone Gunman, right, with the, you know, the remote controlled jets being flown into the towers months before the events of 9/11 on the pilot of the Lone Gunman. I think it's safe to say that in that regard, there was a lot of predictive programming that was known and intentional. And in, I would say in Twin Peaks, there's got to be some degree of that. I don't know individually about David Lynch or Mark Frost at all, but you know, the second season ends with Laura Palmer saying, "I'll see you in 25 years." So it's very kind of surprising that, you know, I don't know if they knew 25 years ago that the show would come back in 25 years. Maybe they did know, maybe it was scripted and planned, but I would say it's safe to assume that they have some degree of knowledge. I mean, this is a 400 page book that's full of all kinds of conspiracies.
Interesting. Let's look at that scene with the box. There's a black, there's like a glass box, right? That's there's this one guy. It's of course during a sex scene. But yeah, that it fills up with this black smoke. And I think that Cooper ends up in that. Is that the Black Lodge, that glass box? Do you think he's set there to monitor this, I believe?
The Black Lodge is really just a kind of a state of being that, that Cooper's in, which is, that's where Cooper is, right? So he can be in the Black Lodge and be, in that waiting room with the little man, or he can be walking through infinite versions of the waiting room with nothing in them. Or he can be flying through non-existence, or he can be in that big electrical box or whatever he was in. I mean, that he's stuck there and he wants to get out. So, what this box is another portal. So just like there's a portal at Glastonbury Grove that opens at certain times when there was supposed to be a conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn in at the end of season two, which is where Wyndham Earl took Cooper's girlfriend, another homecoming, another queen, Annie, played by Heather Graham. That's where Wyndham Earl murdered her by taking her into the Black Lodge as a kind of sacrifice. And so what this black box is, I think, is where it's another portal, another way to exit the Black Lodge or the spiritual world. That's why Cooper's spirit shows up there. You know, where the body that he was supposed to be in wasn't there because Bob doesn't want to go back to the Black Lodge. So I think that's my thesis, at least, on why Cooper's kind of floating about in the ether. And then when he comes back, for whatever reason, he's lost his memory, which could be what they were saying in the early episodes, was that something is lost. Something's lost. And, you know, that's probably Cooper's memory. So, you know, he's kind of walking around like an idiot. Doesn't know what's going on. And so that's just another portal opening, I think. And It's interesting that the portal opens when they have sex.
Right. So yeah.
Here we have another Crowleyan sex magic theme. And then whatever comes out, some sort of entity, I don't know if it's the demon or a different demon or what, but it kills the couple.
The couple. There. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a sex magic. I mean, this is supposedly ideas and theories that the deeper, darker occultists really have, right? The Thelema, supposedly they were into this kind of stuff. Is it, I mean, from your point of view, this is just an interesting discussion to have on top over it. Is there anything to this stuff? I mean, is there a reality to this? Does any of this work? Is it demonic? Is it satanic? Is it just they're experimenting with forces which they don't know what they are? What's your views on this stuff?
I would say all the above. I mean, I think a lot of people do take it seriously. Well, not a lot of people. Some people take it seriously. I don't know about the cases of Mark Frost or David Lynch. I'm not saying they're deep occultists. For all I know, they think it's a hilarious joke. I don't know. But I think some people take it seriously. I think that, you know, just as much as people take religion seriously. I mean, you know, there are alternate versions of all these kinds of things. And I think it's safe to assume that even if, you know, L. Ron Hubbard might have gone and started his own religious group, you know, you get the impression that Crowley and Jack Parsons probably took it seriously. I mean, they're, you know, doing these very bizarre sex rituals. We know that a lot of the, you know, these documentaries have been made about elites involved in you know, weird sex stuff. So I don't see how it would, it's not too much of a leap to assume that, you know, if you're into all that, then there's a good chance that at least some people are into believing that this is real. I know that in my case, I've never been a part of sex magic, but, I know that in my case, back when I was young, I did some pretty hardcore hallucinogens a few times and had some pretty dark experiences that, yes, I understand they could be explained as merely chemical psychological reactions to the drug, or they could actually line up more with what you read. Like this week, I'm reading Marquia Alade's famous book on shamanism, which is like 500-page classic treatise on the history of shamanism from an academic perspective. I'm not saying that he's right. I'm just saying that it's an analysis. And the consistent themes in shamanism across the world, by the way, not in some select locale, there are consistent themes in all those. You have the journey after death, you have the hallucinogenic at times or drug related trip, where you have trauma, accidents that trigger the out of body experience or whatever. I think all that's real. I mean, again, I've had my own dark experience with LSD when I was 17, and I don't think that it was just psychological.
Interesting. Yeah, there's a tree scene there, I remember too.
This is they said that the demon has a new form. Mm-hmm. he's now an electrical leafless Christmas tree. I heard some sort of
with a weird blob head on it,
with a giant bubblegum head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, this is, I mean, I think most people look at it and just like, what the fuck is this? You know, but they might be drawn to it. I think there's some maybe, themes in there that are kind of, eternal, which people are probably going to be pulled towards, I think.
That's true. But David Lynch also has a great sense of humor and he likes to play with goofy stuff. And so if you look at the Black Lodge and the room there and the tree, it has this kind of cheese ball quality to it. I mean, and that's kind of on purpose. It's kind of supposed to, I mean, those lights that are in the lodge there, they don't look very expensive. They look like cheap Walmart lights. And you've got this very fake looking Venus de Milo or whatever that statue is. So it's kind of cheese ball. You know, that tree looks cheesy. And I think that's on purpose. And that's because another element to this, as I said, if you go back to the 80s and 90s, I remember when I was a teenager, there was all these stupid soap operas, and they would have to take the soap operas in really weird directions to keep people's attention. So some of the, you know, like the new narrative would be like the soap star is possessed by a demon. Literally, that was a big theme in the 90s. And then, so that's partly what David Lynch is playing with here is remember, if you remember, this is a soap opera originally.
Right.
Twin Peaks
is a
takeoff on soap operas.
Because it didn't begin like that, obviously. In the first episode, was just the murder was very down to earth, if I remember correctly, right? And then it evolved into becoming stranger and stranger in a way.
Yeah, he says that there was a certain plan for where the show would go, and then they were limited in what they could do. I guess they were only allowed that second season. And so he says he doesn't like how the second season kind of went in a very silly way. I like it. I think it's funny. It basically turns into a kind of a dark comedy, but that's probably not where he wanted it to go. So I think what we're seeing now in the new episodes is really what he had in mind for it, you know, which is basically just a newer, cooler, darker 18-hour David Lynch movie.
So it's 25 years later. It's what they said in the show. Is there any other reason why they're releasing it at this time, do you think? Or is it just that timing of how the first show turned out?
Well, he's an interesting guy because he doesn't seem to really care much for Hollywood. You know, some of the films that he's made were pretty much middle fingers to Hollywood, and he doesn't seem like it. You know, he said he's not going to make movies anymore because, well, obviously, for one, he's getting older in age, but he also, there's not really the place for the auteur in movie making anymore. It's all, you know, cookie cutter TV shows and Marvel movies. So you don't get these kinds of weird art house type movies anymore. I mean, to
That's
some
true.
Degree,
but
you're not going to get a theater release for this kind of a thing. So
right.
I think on one level, he wanted to kind of leave the world with, you know, his final vision. Cause that's what he's going to be known for, Twin Peaks. So he wanted to kind of leave the world with, I guess, his vision of what it he wanted it to be in these last 18 episodes, assuming that there's not more seasons or whatever.
Right.
But he says he's not making any more movies and he's done. And I think he's probably telling the truth about that. I don't think that's hype.
He's getting old, you know. But one thing I noticed too, as I was watching through the episode last night, it was he's basically taking everything from previous movies, including some actors that showed up and just, you know, from Mulholland Drive and from, I don't know if there was any from Lost Highway, but, you know, just bunched it all in together into this one theme, you know?
Yeah, Balthazar Getty appears at the end of, I believe, episode 3 or 4 for a second. Who's the Pete character in Lost Highway?
Yeah.
But yes, I think, yeah, it's probably a bit of a last hurrah, I guess you could say. So that might be part of it. But also there's this other possible theory that the way that he views the psyche and the astral realm or whatever you want to call it, and this comes up in Lost Highway, Inland Empire, excuse me. Sometimes it seems like David Lynch wants to play with the idea of fictional worlds overlapping. So you might have a character from Twin Peaks, maybe that's coming into the world of Wild at Heart, right? Because Laura Palmer, the actress, she ends up as the Good Witch of the West in Wild at Heart. And she's in that kind of angelic pose, which is very similar to how she ends up in Twin Peaks, where she's got like an angel version of her that goes to heaven. So you get this kind of cross worlds idea, which does actually mesh up with certain trends or ideas in hermeticism or occultism or theology or religion that, you know, maybe the imaginal, the spiritual realm is in some way connected to everybody else's spiritual realm, so to speak. Does that make, I know that sounds a little weird, but like if you watch Inland Empire, Laura Dern's character seems to be, her mind or her psyche seems to step into the mind of a whore from like 100 years ago.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, he definitely has deeper layers to it. And,
by the way, this is actually in, this is a theme in Stephen King's Dark Tower series. The Dark Tower is kind of the center of the universe in a spiritual sense. And through the doors in the tower, you can step into other people's psyche. So the second installment of the Dark Tower series is actually about Roland, or I forget who, or a killer, I can't remember. But they've actually stepped into the psyche of a person that we see out on the street who, you know, you would probably take for a madman, but it's actually somebody else's spirit or consciousness, which I hold out the possibility for that.
What's your analysis of David Lynch himself? I mean, what is he on any side of this? Is he a gray cardinal in between the black and the white, or is it anything, for those who kind of fear the occult a bit more, for the lack of a better term, is David Lynch a facilitator of this, of bringing this into the world when he's doing shows like this, if they are, him and Mark Frost are indeed aware of this kind of stuff?
I don't know. That's a great question. Again, he's into, you know, Eastern thought. Obviously the character of Cooper in many ways is kind of like Lynch, in that the Cooper character is into Tibetan Buddhism. He's into meditation. He's into, connecting things through free association. There's that very funny scene, I think in episode 2 or 1, right after the pilot, where the way that Cooper tells everybody he's going to solve the crime is by throwing rocks at a bunch of bottles and seeing which one breaks, and then writing on a chalkboard, like, which, you know, there's like names on the rocks and stuff. So he's like using this very bizarre form of association and divination to solve the mystery. And it's a very funny scene. It's comedic. I mean, right. It's not totally serious, but it's all about synchronicity, and the show itself is consistently about synchronicity and Cooper realizing these patterns that he sees as coming from some otherworldly source. And so the show ultimately is not about the death of Laura Palmer or this or that. It's actually about the journey that Cooper's on, and he's surrendered. Unfortunately, he's been captive to the dark side. And so, we're waiting to see what happens in the new ones. Presumably Cooper will get out. I don't know, but, so I don't know. I think David Lynch is a storyteller, and he sees himself as an artist. He's, you know, very into mixed media. He does a lot of music. Krista Bell, who's in the show, they have done albums together. So I think he probably sees himself, or tries to see himself, as a shamanic version of an artist, right? So the artist receiving inspiration and, you know, putting his work out into the world. Good or evil, I don't know what his view of himself would be.
There's another scene with Bowie in the first season. Let's take a look at that one, see what you you had some take on this. I think you were talking about it. He shows up, and there's more of that teleportation stuff in it too. I didn't actually remember that Bowie was in the first season. But that's interesting. And the little demon shows up again. There's only a little bit of, Bow in there, but one of the classic things he does, of course, Jay, is that he pulls it backward, right? The actors read the line backward, and then they play that backward to get this weird, eerie kind of way of speaking the dialogue, you know? There's some techniques in there that are pretty original, you know?
Well, this is reported to be a Crowleyan thing, too, to train the mind to view things and look at things in a different order. So if you practice saying things in reverse, so the idea goes, then this kind of prepares the mind for looking at things in a different way. So the story, I don't know if it's true, but the story is that David Lynch kind of made them on the set really learn their lines in reverse. So those funny scenes in the Black Lodge where they're speaking in reverse, but it's, we hear it normally. It could be based, I don't know if that's a rumor, I don't know, but the meaning of the Bowie thing is, you see the electrical lines there, is that this was part of that idea of traveling through electrical wires as a spirit. And what's happened to Jeffries, the Bowie character, is what's happened now to Coop. Coop is in the same position of being gone for 25 years, and presumably somebody else inhabited his body, or we don't know, but that all plays into the present series, the four episodes, because we're told it's a Blue Rose case, and it relates to Agent Jeffries, who has supposedly been aiding evil Cooper.
All right, interesting. So where do you think the show will go? I don't know how many episodes are out now, but four I think in total so far, but there's more coming. What would you like to make the viewer alert on if they watch it, and upcoming things? Is there any messages encoded into it that we should watch out for, do you think?
Yeah, I think that we're going to see 14 more episodes that will give us, obviously, a lot more characters are going to be introduced, people who've signed on to the show that we haven't seen yet. A lot of the original characters we haven't seen. We haven't seen Audrey Horne yet. So I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a cavalcade of people continuing that idea of other Lynch movies, not just Twin Peaks, but other Lynch movies kind of merging into this fictional world. So the blending of fictional worlds will be there. It's going to be a Blue Rose case, which means the supernatural, an X-File, basically. We're going to see a lot more weirdness that relates to the spiritual realm. But just remember that the weird parts usually have to deal with things happening out of time and out of order, and many times in a symbolic fashion in the spiritual world. So while they may be mystifying, if you keep that kind of in mind, it's not, I don't think it's hard to decode. And what else have we not seen explained? There's another mafia element to this, which is interesting because in Twin Peaks, it was really confined to the area, the fictional town Twin Peaks. And we never really left that place. Now we're in South Dakota, we're in Las Vegas, we're in New York. And so there's something to do with the mob and these casinos that in some way are trying to have evil Cooper knocked off. Now, that's interesting because David Lynch mentions the mob in quite a few movies. You know, this is a big part of both Lost Highway and Mulholland Drive, where the mob is in the background of Hollywood. They're deciding who gets what roles in Mulholland Drive in the films. So that's, again, another revelation, I think, from on the part of David Lynch about how things really work. And
the acting couch.
Yeah. And in Blue Velvet, you also have the theme of corrupt cops covering up the killer, Frank, played by Dennis Hopper. So, you know, you've got a lot of the same themes that are going to be present here. But I'm interested to see that that mob element come back, and then also the more insight into what exactly is the architecture and functioning of this spiritual realm in this story with that box. I mean, that box is obviously, I said, some kind of portal. But I'm liking that it's self-consciously showing us the demonic. You know what I mean? It's not aliens. It's not space beings. It's spirits and demons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that kind of stuff, folks. There's a lot of people into that kind of stuff, and I think there is a branch of the elite, as we've been talking about, Jade, that definitely are into this, and this is a kind of both a warning but an exploration in these ideas, too. And there's some very dark motifs in this, a lot of sexual motifs, because that seems to be that kind of ice wide shut type elite circles that we've been warned about from other directors, right? So those are themes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going on at One Eye Jacks. That's a great point. It's very much an eyes wide shut type thing.
So Jay, for people who want to find out more, this is a great little opening teaser, if you will, to the world of Twin Peaks, what people can find in there. For those who just think it's just hogwash and nothing to it, there's a lot of things for those who know that kind of stuff. Esoteric Hollywood, your book, of course, goes deeper into this. Tell us how people can get that book.
Yeah, you can go to my site is the best way to get it. And that supports me, not Amazon. And I offer signed copies for inside and outside the U.S. There's a tab at the top where the images on the sidebars. It's had, I think I'm almost to 85 star reviews right around there on US, UK, and Goodreads markets. So that's very good for a book that's only been out for 5 months. And everybody that likes it loves it. So, or everybody that's bought it loves it for the most part. 95% of the people do. So it's definitely something you'll learn from. And the Lynch section is good. It's about 30 or 40 pages of David Lynch in there towards the back. And there's my full Twin Peaks analysis is in there. If you like what we're talking about, I go into a lot more depth. And I also cover Mulholland Drive and maybe I can't remember if Lost Highways, but sections of Lost Highway too come up at times in the book. So yeah, there's some good David Lynch in there.
Very good. Well, thank you, Jay. Folks, definitely get a copy of the book if you want to find out a lot more stuff in there. And of course, you support Jay's work as well. So definitely head on over to jaysanalysis.com to purchase a copy of the book directly from him. Okay, that's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Good having you here. Always a pleasure having you with us. RedIce.tv is the website. Also check out RedIceMembers.com if you want to support our work. Get a membership. You can watch everything that we do. Everything is in the archive back to our starting date in 2006. We're not going to do a live TV show this weekend. We're going to be doing some traveling, but we'll be back, you know, next Saturday for that. But we have more radio coming up on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday next week. So definitely tune into that if you want to watch and listen to more material from us. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.